Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, June 3rd. Begin today's reading on the front page. County's challenge: no dough. Rosales' solution: small sales tax hike from Urbana. After spending the past several years searching for a buyer and trying to make a dent in the mountain of debt tied to the nursing home, many of Champaign County's financial resources are depleted. Now comes the tall order of paying for maintenance and building issues that were put off, dealing with a downtown jail and sheriff's office past its prime. Finding a new place to put all those inmates and sheriff's offices and paying for replacements for aging computers and software. Champaign County Board Chair Geraldo Rosales says he has a two-pronged plan to address these issues, which he shared during a Sunday interview with the News Gazette Media. He hopes to implement it not by increasing property taxes, but by asking voters to support a quarter-cent increase in the county's sales tax for public safety now that the nursing home is no longer county-owned property. We were always in the hole, largely because of it. That sucked up a lot of money. Even today, after the sale, we still have to pay Medicaid and Medicare that we were committed to pay prior to the sale. And we still have a sidewalk to pay for. He said taxes that help pay for the nursing home will be abated once the county is no longer paying for what he called high-end bonds. Rosales said the county put off a significant amount of preventative maintenance work and needed repairs in some 20 buildings while making payments to cover nursing home debts. We failed to make investments in the maintenance and welfare of those buildings. In downtown Urbana, the old county jail and sheriff's office building has deteriorated to the point where county officials are talking demolition. The downtown jail was built very cheaply, had received low maintenance, and has outlived its usefulness. It is falling apart, and the locks are even opening up. Rosales said it could cost $7 million or more to knock down the downtown jail sheriff's complex. But we got those quotes many years back, and the cost today could be even more. The downtown complex is razed. Rosales said the inmates and workers would need to ro relocate. Sending them to another county isn't a realistic option. Nobody wants our prisoners. There is a sense that if you build jails, you fill them up. Where do you move them temporarily for the next 2 or 3 years? We had looked at moving both the sheriff and county administrative offices to Lincoln Square Mall. Then we could get a ride to then we could get ride of get rid of Brookins, which is a former school that doesn't have insulated walls. But there's no money for anything. One option being discussed, according to Rosales, is to add pods to the satellite jail facility on Urbana's east side as a way to accommodate the downtown inmates, the sheriff's office, and mental health needs. The satellite jail was designed in a modular fashion so we would add to it like Legos. Rosales said additional pods are needed to house inmates so members of different gangs can be kept apart and men can be separated from women. Rosales said there is also a push for the new facility to have classrooms, a library, space for visitors to meet with incarcerated loved ones, and a waiting room for family and friends. We need much more than adding cells and beds. One estimate for this work came in at $20 million, but again, that was several years ago. Let's get an architect and think and dream. The cost of iron and masonry has gone up. We need a new feasibility study. On top of all that, the replacement of computers and software throughout the county has been delayed while checks were being written for the nursing home. Every year, IT asks for money to update the systems, and every year we tell them no. Part one of Rosales's plan calls for asking voters to approve a quarter-cent sales tax increase for public safety. Rosales said estimates show that the additional tax revenue could mean $500,000 to $750,000 a year. That could be used for jail demolition, building onto the satellite jail, a new sheriff's office, and investing in new public safety software. He said he'd like the county board to consider putting a question on the ballot sometime this fall and ask voters to approve a referendum next spring when they also choose candidates for president. Then the county could issue tax anticipation warrants to cover the jail and sheriff's office projects. One advantage to the sales tax hike is that part of the revenue would come from folks outside Champaign County who are in town to shop or attend events. We have all these events that bring people to the county, from football games to graduation on campus, fairs and tournaments, and the Illinois Marathon. Let those people start contributing to our jail. The second part of Rosales' plan calls for setting aside an additional $500,000 in the county budget each year for work on the 20 buildings and the computer software. Asking for increased fees and fines is a non-starter, he believes. Democrats don't want higher fees and fines because they think it fleeces the poor people. Those are the ones who usually go to court and cannot afford it, and we don't get a lot of money from that. Quizmasters. Uni High's runner-up performance marks U-turn at national level. From Urbana. It was a strange feeling for the Uni High Quiz Bowl participants up on a stage in a ballroom at the Atlanta Marriott Marquis with around 1,300 people looking on in the championship matchup of the National Academic Quiz Tournament. Microphones were affixed to their heads so their every word could be heard on a Twitch stream, which racked up 5,700 views. It didn't necessarily add to the pressure, Ethan Ashbrook said, but it didn't make the moment that much more special. It was weird actually having people watch you play. There weren't so many nerves for me, but it was just a strange experience to have people cheering for you and wanting you to do well. President Tim Cho joked that the reason he joined Quiz Bowl, known as Scholastic Bowl in Illinois, is because he wanted to find an activity in which he could flex. As far as Quiz Bowl goes, this was the ultimate stage to do that. And after finishing 51st a year ago, just making the championship was a boon for the Illini-X. We already did really well, and there wasn't really any pressure to do much better. It was just really fun. The preparation for the tournament began last summer after 2018's relatively disappointing finish. Each of the team members has his expertise, at least for the most part. Ashbrook is the team's literary guide. Cho is a historian buff. Dylan Bowman is the point person for math, while Jonathan Lau covers a broad range of subjects with a specialty in geography and history. Questions run the gamut covering history, literature, science, fine arts, current events, popular culture, sports, and more, according to the NAQT website. Some questions are directed to an individual team in the head-to-head games. Others are toss-ups that either team can answer, which a player answers by buzzing in Jeopardy style. Ashbrook said the preparation involved plenty of summer research, including falling down more than a few Wikipedia rabbit holes, and reading summaries and plenty of books. I think they've developed our team dynamic pretty well, and we can encourage each other and fist bump after every question. We did an insanely good job of covering everything they have. This tournament especially tends to lean towards history or stuff like world current events, geography things, and Tim and Jonathan would eat that stuff up and just do insanely well. It was nuts. Ultimately, the underdog Illini-X lost to the powerhouse from Beaver Creek, Ohio in the championship. In the immediate aftermath, the loss stung. But after they put their buzzards down and picked up a runner-up trophy that was almost as tall as each of the players, the reality of their accomplishment set in. When we finished and got the second place, at the moment I was kind of disappointed because we came all this way and we had such a good playoff run. But a few hours later, I was genuinely really happy. We came so far from being some random team in downstate Illinois that nobody cared about, and now we're one of the best teams in the country. That was really amazing. Seeing all our family and friends and people from school supporting us was really nice. A match made in Chicago. U of I, $400 million collected for DPI statewide network. A $500 million state grant for construction of the University of Illinois vaunted Discovery Partners Institute and statewide innovation network is contingent on the school raising the same amount in private matching funds. The U of I says it has collected about $400 million toward that goal, including about $170 million in corporate investments, some of which have yet to be announced. but the total also counts $230 million in non-state funds from the U of I's three campuses and Northern Illinois University, Director William Sanders said. All four schools are hubs in the statewide Illinois Innovation Network, headquartered at the DPI in Chicago, and would receive some of the state money for new facilities on their campuses. Many of those projects were already on the drawing board, but the U of I President Tim Killeen and others said the DPI initiative put them in motion. Would they happen without the DPI? Not at this place, and that's for sure. DPI and the Innovation Network are designed to bring together faculty and student researchers in food and agriculture, healthcare, computing and data, and the environment to work with business and tech partners to foster innovation and economic growth. The $500 million included in the state budget approved late Friday will go toward the planning, construction, and other capital improvements associated with DPI. It doesn't specify matching funds, but Governor J.B. Pritzker is steadfast that he will not release funds without private matching money. As proposed by the U of I, the Urbana campus would get $100 million of that, including $40 million for a new data sciences center to replace Illini Hall at Wright and John Street. It's a partner project to the planned renovation of nearby Altgeld Hall. The two buildings are home to the math and statistics departments. Another $25 million of Urbana's DPI money would go to a new Illinois biomedical translational facility. $20 million would be used for an expansion of the National Center for Supercomputing Applications and the Seibel Center for Computer Science. And $15 million would go to expansion of the U of I Research Park. The campus has committed $137 million to those projects, $60 million for the Data Science Center, $50 million to the biomedical facility, and $27 million for the NCSA and computer science expansion, according to information Sanders provided to the Campus Academic Senate in April. Killeen and other U of I officials said the campus matching funds would come from a mix of sources known as discretionary or unrestricted funds. Those can include private gifts, endowment income, interest earned on campus accounts, and institutional cost recovery funds, money from research grants to cover administrative overhead, said campus spokesman Chris Harris. But they can also include tuition income or student fees designated for maintenance at academic buildings. A specific funding source has not been identified for the DPI-related projects. U of I spokesman Tom Hardy emphasized that the matching funds would not come from taxpayer support. The $170 million in industry contributions for DPI include a recently announced $65 million gift from Deerfield Management for a new drug discovery pavilion at the U of I Chicago campus to help accelerate research and commercialization of drug discoveries. Another $100 million will come from in-process industry money yet to be announced in the value of the land donated by developer Related Midwest for DPI's permanent home in its 78th development in Chicago's South Loop. Killeen expects the $400 million in matching funds to grow now that every state university has become part of the Illinois Innovation Network. Projects are planned at each of those hubs with help from industry partners. Killeen and Sanders said the state's $500 million pledge was key to landing private donations, including the $65 million from Deerfield Management. That's something that was not on the horizon before the DPI was announced. Killeen said the U of I is meeting with other corporations, and there's a lot of interest in DPI internationally as well. It's a significant calling card. The projects benefiting from the $500 million state DPI grant were high priorities for the campuses involved, but they've been accelerated by the DPI initiative. These are all things that the campuses have argued for. They did their analysis, they came forward with their high priority plans that would fit in DPI. So it's a win-win. Sanders said the conversion of Illini Hall to a data sciences hub was directly motivated by the creation of the DPI. The Urbana campus announced plans in 2017 for a new data sciences institute designed to pull together data scientists to cement the U of I's leadership on the big data. Then last August, the campus said DPI money would be used to help replace Illini Hall with a state-of-the-art classroom and research facility focused on statistics, data analysis, and machine learning. The campus also said it would invest $10 million over 5 years in its computing infrastructure and $10 million to hire faculty across campus in data sciences and analytics, from business to social sciences to applied health sciences. "We knew we were going to be pressed for space," Provost Andreas Kalogeras said, "but the Data Sciences Center and the NCSA and Cybel Center projects will provide the space and facilities to support them. These are things that we are going to do," he said, "but DPI accelerated the projects and allowed them to expand and be more impactful." The Translational Biomedical Facility is also included in the campus strategic plan. It would provide a place where new biomedical advances could be developed and tested in a clinical environment right away, bringing together physicians, researchers, and industry partners. It's a natural fit with the new Carl Illinois College of Medicine, the U of I Cancer Center, and the emphasis on big data, and could attract more industry to the state. Meanwhile, the U of I Systems Central Office is providing money for DPI startup operations, estimated to be about $2.2 million a year. As of April, the U of I had invested about $1.1 million, but that number is expected to grow as DPI ramps up its staff. Besides Sanders, DPI recently hired Phyllis Baker as its Director of Academic Affairs. The Institute is also hiring directors for community engagement and corporate engagement. The operating budget covers salaries, the rent for DPI's temporary office space at 200 South Wacker Drive in Chicago, and other expenses. Hardy emphasized that no funds from the three campuses are being used for DPI's core administrative operations. The U of I system has committed to cover DPI's administrative and operating costs until a longer-term funding model is established. The plan is to create endowments through donations, annual funding from industry and university partners, and other sources. Some costs will be covered through overhead from federal grants. And in a sidebar, hundreds of millions set aside for the U of I system from Springfield. The $40 billion fiscal 2020 state operating budget approved late Friday by the General Assembly includes the U of I system's largest appropriation increase in nearly two decades. Among the highlights of the budget, which sets aside $622 million for the U of I system, an increase of 4.6%, $451 million statewide for the Monetary Award Program, which provides financial aid to in-state residents. That's an increase of $50 million from the current fiscal year. An additional $10 million for year two of a state scholarship program created to encourage in-state students to attend college in Illinois. Under the program, the U of I and other universities across the state provide matching funds. And $500 million for the Discovery Partners Institute and Illinois Innovation Network. In a Saturday letter to faculty, staffs, and students, U of I officials lauded Governor Pritzker and legislators, noting, "Our success in this spring's legislative session is the byproduct of a true team effort, and we are grateful to everyone across the system who stepped up to advocate on our behalf." That included more than 3,000 emails during the spring session that shared stories about the impact of the U of I system has had in their lives and how it drives the fortunes of our state. Also on the front page, cannabis and criminal justice in Illinois. Tensions high as countdown to January 1 begins. On a 1 to 10 anxiety scale, put Illinois criminal justice leaders down for a 7.8 on the topic of marijuana legalization. As legislators were signing off on a final bill to ship off to Governor Pritzker late last week, News Gazette Media was surveying 48 county sheriffs, state's attorneys, and police chiefs from every corner of the state about their concerns with the implementation come January 1, 2020. What we learned: 24 of the 38 who put a number on it rated their level of concern at an 8 or above, with their rationale ranging from dire reports out of Colorado to it's the end of the world as we know it. Here's Martin Edwards, sheriff of Warren County in western Illinois. We will see people using bongs on the street corners, and I hope these lawmakers who were for this bill have to drive their grandchildren past those same corners and explain what they are seeing. Among the less panicked panelists, Gibson City Police Chief Adam Rosendahl and Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reese and Sheriff Dustin Howerman, all were 5 out of 10. Only 5 respondents went lower than 5. More than 24 officials declined to take a public stance, citing either the contentious issue it's becoming among their constituents, or, as Macoupin County Sheriff Sean Call noted last Wednesday, we just got the 610-page bill last night. And from the local page, an article by Tom Kasich, 13th District race could be a rematch of the 18 election. The 2020 election in Illinois' 13th Congressional District, which includes Champaign-Urbana and much of central Illinois down to the Illinois suburbs of St. Louis, already is looking like the 2018 election. So far, only Republican incumbent Rodney Davis and his 2018 challenger Springfield Democrat Betsy Laudergan are raising money and acting like candidates. Laudergan already has announced that she's running again. Davis hasn't said anything official, but he's brought in more than $500,000 in campaign contributions in the first 3 months of 2019, and his political operation has been sending out regular appeals for money, and attacks on left-wing Betsy Laudergan and her boss, J.B. Pritzker. Davis, meanwhile, publicly preaches about the need for bipartisanship and civility in politics, the same sort of deception he employed in 2018 against Laudergan. The deja vu doesn't apply just to Davis. Laudergan already has made clear that her primary message will be about health care, as it was last year, and she's been endorsed by Emily's List, the pro-choice group that was a big contributor to her campaign in 2018. Voters across our nation sent a clear message last November that they want leaders in Washington who will stand by their side and fight to ensure that middle-class families have access to quality, affordable health care, Laudergan said in making her announcement in April. And last week, Emily's List, which gave Laudergan more than $85,000 in the 2018 election cycle, said it was backing her again and had made Davis one of its top political targets in 2020. Republican Rodney Davis continuously puts his party's dangerous agenda, from their bill to strip health care from millions of hardworking Americans to their movement to defund Planned Parenthood, ahead of the needs of the working families he was elected to serve. It's possible other Democrats could jump into the 13th district race. Davis certainly hopes so, if for nothing more than to force Laudergan to spend money on a primary race and to rough her up before the general election. But if any other Democrats are going to run, they need to move quickly. 2 years ago at this point, there were already 2 Democrats in the race, with 2 more joining in July. The congressman is embracing President Trump more than he did last year, and certainly more than in 2016, when Davis rescinded his support a month before the election and said he hoped that Trump would withdraw from the race. All over the infamous Billy Bush audio tapes, where Trump made vulgar comments about women. Last week, in an interview with Dave Gentry, Davis defended Trump after the Wall Street Journal reported that military officials tried to keep the USS John McCain, named after the father and grandfather of Trump's greatest Republican foe, from the president's view while he was on a trip to Japan. "It's sad," said Davis. "It doesn't matter what this president does. We've got a great economy. We've got great jobs. Unemployment is at historic lows. We've reformed our tax for the first time in 30 years, getting things done. And this is what the 24-hour news cycle wants to talk about. It's crazy." Although Trump is unpopular in this part of Davis's district, The president did much better in every other county in the 13th district, grabbing more than two-thirds of the vote in six of the 14 counties in the district. So in a marriage of political convenience, Davis apparently will stick with Trump, forfeiting vote-rich Champaign County in favor of aligning himself with Trump in the rest of the district. But no matter who wins the 13th district race in 2020, the victory will be fleeting. Redistricting will change the face of the district in 2022, and it's possible that Democrats who will draw up new congressional maps will put Davis and another Republican or two in the same district, or they'll take Champaign County out of Davis's district. And from the local page, Tom's Mailbag. Between Heritage Park and Kaufman Lake, near the path along the Copper Slough, there are the remains of an old dam and what may once have been a mill run. Along the way, there's graffiti on every surface. What's its history? Don Werthier has all the details. First, though, it's not a former mill run. The concrete structure was a combination outlet for a large 36-diameter tile line, a second large 42-inch diameter tile line, and also served as the upstream M of the Copper Slough Channel. Upstream of that point, around 1938, was all farm ground, and there was no channel. Instead, there was a grass waterway that remained dry when it was not raining. While the Copper Slough Channel was more than 10 feet deep, the grass waterway was only 2 to 3 feet deep. By that time the I-72 was constructed, there was continuous flow in the grass waterway due to all of the upstream development, effectively converting it into an extension of the Copper Slough Channel. Upstream development included several subdivisions, Parkland College, the Kraft Humco plant, and the Northern Illinois, now Illinois American Water Treatment Plant. These all contributed flow 24/7, 365 days a year into the grass waterway. And so a northerly extension of the Copper Slough Channel was constructed through Heritage Park and Dodds Park north to the Norfolk South Railroad to accommodate the continuous flow. As part of the construction of I-74, both of the tile lines were rerouted to the east, and a new channel was dug just east of the concrete structure as an outlet for the tile flow. As an aside, the pathway connecting Heritage Park and Kaufman Lake is one of the wildest and creepiest parts of the Champaign-Urbana that I have experienced. It includes the small railroad trestle, some phenomenally creative graffiti under the interstate highway bridges, and a lot of wildlife and natural areas along the Copper Slough. Finally, National Be Too Easy for Eight Co-Champs. There were warning signs throughout a marathon day of spelling that this Scripps National Spelling Bee would not conclude like any other in the event's 94 history. All eight received full winner's freight of the trophy, and Scripps simply could not come up with words difficult enough to challenge them. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, June 3rd. Please stay tuned.